Ahlan wa sahlan. Since 2004, the dream of Crown Prince Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa came to fruition with the sight of our fourth round on the 2013 calendar. The home of motorsport in the Middle East, the Bahrain International Circuit in Sakhir. Michael Schumacher was the first to take the checkered flag at this twisty technical track, and today his countrymen continue the quest to be the best. However, all has not been an island desert paradise here, as social unrest, protests, and fighting caused the cancellation of the event in 2011, and the kingdom is still on shaky ground. Will the Shiite hit the fans? And whose name will be part of history in the sands of time as he drinks the non-alcoholic juice and rosewater on the podium? Stay tuned, listeners. This is your Formula One Crown Princess, Desiree, and this is your F1 Weekly Bahraini Grand Prix Racecast. Masalama, listeners.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. With the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 624, April 22nd. 2013. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the Podium Fresh Rose Water of the Bahrain Grand Prix.
Thank you, Nas. On today's program, Sebastian Vettel, now the man everybody loves to hate. Ferrari mistakes could cost Fernando another championship. Are things more evenly matched at Mercedes than we thought? And, of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the king himself, Nasser Hamid. We've got Tech Talk with Tim. I call him Stanford Tim. And special interview with Derek Walters. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you, sir. Hope all is well with our familia, global familia. What a great, fantastic race. The opening laps, the closing laps.
Yep.
I am loving it.
It was a sandwich. Great excitement at the beginning. We have tire management in the middle with a little lettuce, tomato, and some mayo.
It's a falafel in Bahrain.
Okay? It is. Pardonnez-moi. Yes, you're right. Falafel. And then at the end, more excitement when everybody is allowed to race except for Sebastian Vettel, where they told him to keep it in control.
Some went out of control and over-raced.
Some people did. And well, yes, they had to because they're...
The heat was on.
Yeah, the heat was on. Their testicular fortitude was questioned.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and we know what happens here. In this studio, when testicular fortitude is questioned, you are fired.
Oh, wow.
Yes, exactly. So there you have it, Nask. Fantastic Grand Prix. Great fun. Not a great venue for me, I'm not sure. And not enough protesting.
Well, that is true, but now they are saying that next year it will be the 10th anniversary and they may do a night race. That's the latest talk from Bahraini officials. And then it will be easier because, for them at least, less visibility for the protesters.
That's true. That's true. But I saw no protesters, Nasser.
Well, they took care of the problem.
Yeah, they did take care of the problem. And I sort of like that style of government.
Yeah, it's called dictatorial. What I say goes.
Exactly. Thank you, El Duce.
Yes.
But anyway, it was
Do they have trains in Manama? That's what I want to know.
That's the question.
So if the trains are not running, hopefully the mini buses are running on time.
Thank you very much, Nas. So Bahrain, of course, there is no chance of wetness, is there? A wet race in Bahrain, is it really possible?
I think once upon a time there was some little bit of rain, little bit. I don't think so.
It evaporates before it even reaches the surface.
True. That is true.
So, but anyway, wonderful qualifying, exciting. Mercedes is impressing.
Yes, they are knocking on heaven's door, and pretty soon they will sneak in another one like they did last year.
No, not exactly. And what's really exciting is, for me, I think Nico Rosberg is handling the pressure of having LCH.
Well, he was able to handle MS, okay, and actually do much better than we thought.
Yeah, well, much better.
So he's no slouch. And plus, you know, he is the original winner of the GP2 inaugural season.
That's true.
So he's pretty good, but so is Mark Webber. And this was very impressive. But I had strong feelings that, you know, race winner would be somebody else. You know, a red car and a car that has infinity on the side.
Something like that. Yeah. I was hoping, well, it was still an exciting podium in the end for the Grand Prix, even though we had seen it before.
Oh, yes, at the same place.
At the same place. So a very, very fun venue. Congratulations to Nico Rosberg for getting that pole position. I thought, go ahead, speak up.
Yeah, it was second pole of his career, and it came at the place where he made his dramatic debut in 2006 with Williams, where he set the fastest lap of the race, which was very good.
And this we were all excited here.
Yes, and this was two in a row pole position for Mercedes, because LCH was on pole last time in Shanghai. And last time the Silver Arrows, as they like to be called, were on back-to-back pole position. We have to go back to the days of Fangio and Moss in 1955.
Wow!
So this is, you know, I'm a motorsports fan. I'm glad they're doing, getting better, and because I want to stay there. I want to see Renault stay there, and now the stock that Honda might come. The latest is Toyota might come back. So times are exciting.
Yeah, you know, it was very exciting, and I was happy for everyone. Also, Force India looking pretty good this weekend.
Very racy.
Very racy. I don't know what's going on, but they're doing a pretty good job setting up the car. And it was an outstanding Grand Prix for them. Keep up the good work. Caterham and Marussia, we don't even need to talk about them because it's pretty much the same story every day and every night. Pastor Maldonado is out qualifying your boy. What's going on there?
Which boy?
Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah,
Valtteri Bottas, I think, needs to start out qualifying Pastor.
Yeah, but, you know, the package is not very impressive.
I know.
Yeah.
They've taken a few steps backwards in terms of aerodynamics, mechanical grip. I just don't know what's going on, but what can you do?
And I feel sorry for Marussia and Caterham. I think we should talk a little bit about them. Otherwise, people would think there are only
okay.
eight teams. You
well,
know?
Let's let, you know, go ahead. Charles Peak. And the interesting thing, that Heikki Kovalainen is back in Formula One, Nasser.
Yeah, he did some running, and I was watching one of these press conference interviews. They were asking Charles Peak, you know, what is your comment on what the team apparently said the car was not balanced properly, so they wanted Heikki Kovalainen to come and check it out. Let's see what happens. Obviously, he has a lot of experience, but you can't make a dog run like a horse. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
Okay. It's one of those things.
Yeah, that's a very famous proverb in Karachi.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Oh, yeah. We have some mean junkyard dogs there.
Yeah, I could imagine. I could imagine. But I thought that was interesting. Of course, Alexander Rossi, their backup driver, went to GP2, who had some pretty good success, huh?
Yeah, very impressive, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have that in Motorsports Mondial.
Sí, señor.
Toro Rosso looking pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a good job. I think they're doing a much better job than Williams. Maybe Williams needs to peek over the fence, see what's going on there.
Yeah, you know, with Toto Wolff leaving and probably will sell his share, and Claire Williams as the head honcho at Williams, I don't know. I still think, you know, I think the best thing they can do with, and, you know, Frank is getting up there in age and Patrick Head is already gone. I really think they should either sell this team or align very seriously with Honda, Toyota, become their quasi-team, you know, just for survival.
Yeah, and not only that, but I think they need a Ross Brawn kind of a person there, and they don't have that. I mean, Patrick Head is gone, and they don't have that stability, that machismo-ness that you need.
No, they have Mike Coughlin, you know.
Yeah, oh, exciting.
He's very good in telecommuting.
I know, yeah, with him and Mike Gascoigne, I think they share an airplane.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Anyway, let's go to the race.
Oh, man, this was exciting.
God, it was exciting. Terrible start for... Well, not terrible, but a slow start for Nico Rosberg. And he knew that even with pole, that in a few laps, he would not be leading this Grand Prix. But it was very, very exciting. Sebastian Vettel right up on the back of the Mercedes. The Nico defended quite well.
Not aggressive.
Very aggressive. Aggressive, but nothing illegal, Nasser.
No, nothing illegal.
Yeah,
but he's a German. He plays by rules.
Exactly.
Unless you tell him, stay behind your teammate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But it was a very exciting race, which allowed another great start from El Machismo Man.
Yes, well, that is always expected, no matter where he is. But let me just tell you, as the start is concerned, this was one of the, just his personal opinion and observation only, this was one of the most exciting opening laps of any Grand Prix in a long, long time. And it took me back to the opening laps of the race where your man Mika Hakkinen made his McLaren debut and out-qualified Ayrton Senna. And Monsieur Motivation led the opening laps, and we are talking the 1993 Portuguese Grand Prix.
Woo! That was exciting.
This start was fantastic. I was talking to a friend of mine just before your arrival in the Palatial Studios, and I said, if you haven't seen it, just watch the first 10 laps and the last 10 laps, and you're going to love Formula One all over again.
Yeah. Great opening lap by Fernando Alonso, sneaking in there, going on the outside. Good opening lap by Felipe Massa, doing what he can to help his equipe or Scuderia, and Paul di Resta, an outstanding...
Boy, that was very, very good.
And I think it's because his cousin got pole position in Long Beach.
I think that had something to do.
I'm telling you, these guys are really communicating well. And
texting.
They're taking it to the track.
Yeah, they're texting.
They're texting.
That's what's
indeed
happening here.
No, it was very exciting. Of course, Sebastian Vettel really was very aggressive on this opening lap. Very impressive. You could tell the determination, especially when he took Fernando Alonso's second spot away from him. It was very impressive. You could tell that this young man, a lot of people say, oh, he's always starting on pole. He can't really race because he starts from the lead. But that's bogus.
Well, you know, there is a tremendous racer in him, and it was on display in the early stages of the race. And, of course, in the result, like LCH, he takes a lot of flak every now and then. But when the heat is on, he is Gordon Ramsay of Grand Prix racing and knows how to deliver a winning dish that Christian Horner and Dr. Marco absolutely enjoy.
And not only do they enjoy, but that means they have to put up with his I am number one antics.
Yeah, and he shows the finger all the time anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no fog of war here.
Oh, no, there's no.
Yeah, very impressive. Lap 3, Sebastian Vettel. His persistence and testicular fortitude pays off. He now leads the Bahrain Grand Prix with a fantastic pass on Nico Rosberg. Fernando Alonso has a stab down inside the pit straight, but no. And, of course, he moves into second position. So Fernando had a great start, but boy, I mean, what's going on with this Italian engineering, Nasser?
Well, you know, It would have been a great battle between him and Vettel, that's for sure.
I think we got ripped off.
Yeah, but, you know, these things happen. Like he said after the race, that the rivals' good luck is not going to last. But I will say, better to have these issues in the early part of the season so you have all season to manage your points tally and this and that. Because if they happen late in the season, it can be very fatal.
Yes, no.
Especially at Spa or Suzuka.
Lap 4, still
a singer.
Thank you. Lap 4, still an exciting race. Nico Rosberg fighting back with Fernando, who still doesn't know his DRS is Stinko, takes down into the inside of Fernando Alonso at turn 1, retakes second place. And meanwhile, we're hearing that Felipe Massa has damage to his front wing. We see the little flap, flap, flap on the left-hand side.
Ferrari had a lot of flip-flop.
Yeah, they had a lot of flip-flops.
Front and back.
Yes, and I felt bad for Ferrari. And I felt bad for Felipe Massa. Ferrari just had a bad weekend, period.
They did.
And what was fun was to see Fernando Alonso, without his DRS working, still fight for some great positions.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it showed that the car isn't that bad, especially...
No, they have a good machine this year.
Yeah. Lap 6, Paul di Resta moves into third. An outstanding job by Force India. He is pumped up and he realizes he's really... got to perform. Maybe he had a little chat with Sergio Perez.
Yeah.
Or maybe they had the same falafel.
Exactly. Maybe too much garbanzo beans in it.
That's true. That can really make you go.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I mean, when these cars in the first few laps, they were coming all together, bunched together. That was just fantastic racing.
It was fantastic. Lap 7, the field is so close at the moment. Top 12 are split just by 10 seconds. Nico Rosberg is in for 4th, but the Mercedes driver is doing a fantastic job defending and struggling with the tires. And you can see the tires drop off on the Mercedes pretty quickly.
Yeah, and what was really surprising, especially with Nico being on pole, his teammate was really not a factor. And obviously, you know, if the car is not...
That's very true. I noticed LCH really wasn't the big topic of conversation.
If anything, he's, you know, elbowing people out of the way, you know. He's pretty good at that. But I missed that.
Yeah. No, I did miss that. Lap 8, Fernando Alonso was forced to pit because the DRS wing is lodged open, which was pretty dangerous. Because when you're going down the straights with the wing open, it's great. You got all that speed. But all of a sudden, when you think it's closing and you need that downforce and it's not there, luckily he's a pretty good driver and managed it really well.
Sure.
Lap 9, Paul DiResta is actually catching the race leader, Sebastian Vettel. And this is an outstanding drive. Vijay Mallya might even get motivated to pay some bills after this drive.
Yes, that would be nice.
It would be. Those poor people at... What's my favorite airline?
Kingfisher.
Thank you very much. And my favorite beer here.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. So when Alonso pits, instead of telling Alonso, don't use the DRS, it's stinko, they smash it down, took 3 guys to do it. He goes out there.
Man, I wanted to see a hammer.
There was no hammer.
In the NASCAR, you know, banging a car.
And some duct tape going on there, strapping it down.
Yep.
Yep, no. But they didn't. He used it. He tried to use it again, thinking that it might have been repaired. It wasn't. He had to pit again. And now we all know there won't be a big battle between Fernando and Sebastian Vettel. Very disappointing.
Yes, that was very disappointing. But I was thinking that DiResta was running second. I said maybe this could be the day when maybe his Sebastian Vettel car will suck up some Bahrain desert sand and done blowed up, and DiResta wins the race.
That would have been fantastic. Yeah. And I had some fantasies of that too, because if anybody, such a nice guy, really putting in 110%, and now with Adrian Sutil coming back, it would have been great Formula One activities.
Yeah, but it was great comeback both by him and Perez, Sergio Perez, in terms of the heat they were getting on.
Oh, absolutely.
For their season so far.
Absolutely. Lap 11, Vettel and Massa both pit for new tires, and they both have excellent stops. Vettel gets out ahead of Jenson Button, and Felipe Massa doesn't. All this means that Paul DiResta leads the Bahrain Grand Prix while texting Dario Franchitti. Yeah. Pretty exciting stuff. I'm sure he was pretty pumped up.
Very impressive. And he had a very impressive race last time also.
Yes, exactly. That's the irony of it all.
Yeah.
So, very good stuff. Lap 12, Jenson Button, is having a stormer, as they say it in England, passing Nico Rosberg for 12th at Turn 1. Fernando Alonso is now down in 15th position, 34 seconds from the lead, Ness. It's over.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Oh, yes.
But what can you do? Lap 16, Sebastian Vettel moves into 2.2 seconds of the leader, who is now Kimi Raikkonen. Now, Kimi Raikkonen, consistently very impressive, race after race after race. This guy's pretty good.
You know, he's only interested in one thing, winning. Oh, I'm sorry, 2 things, winning and not talking.
Yeah, and he took over the lead on lap 15 when Paul DiResta pitted. Kimi Raikkonen finally pits on lap 17 from leading the race. It's a good stop, but outstanding drive. Felipe Massa is cruising. The Brazilian now has more bad news. Right rear puncture. To me, you know, I think these Pirellis are just not built correctly.
I don't know what's going on, but this lottery situation, you know, tire management, like they say, you know, everybody has the same tire, but I mean, the way these things are going, they really need to do something.
I agree.
You know, that at least we know they're going to last 15 laps, not any. For one car, it's 3 laps, for the other car, it's 4 laps. But one thing is very clear. Kimi Raikkonen is a serious smooth operator.
He is.
He goes long distances on any type of tire.
Yes, no, he's doing very well. Lap 19, Vettel leads by 10 seconds over Mark Webber. Paul DeRussa and Raikkonen, they are trying the two-stop strategy. And, of course, both of these guys, Raikkonen doing a better job than Force India on the tires, but both of them have been attempting these long runs on these tires at a number of races. Everybody else is on a three-stop strategy, and on lap 19, Alonso is forced to make a second pit stop when his rear wing is more problematic than ever before. But still, so we've got Vettel, Webber, Button, Grosjean, Rosberg, Perez, DeRussa, Hamilton, Raikkonen, Hülkenberg by lap 20. Perez showing some machismo-ness.
Oh, yeah. He was on fire. I think he had some serious Tabasco sauce with his falafel.
Yeah, him and Paul.
Yes.
Yeah, no, Perez decided, he realized that he wasn't being the Latino man that he could be.
Yeah, and you know, the guy who was also doing very well after his complaints about his chassis was Romain Grosjean.
And Romain Grosjean staying out of trouble this season, got to give it to him.
Him and Pastor.
Yeah, Pastor staying out of trouble.
Yeah.
So it's pretty impressive. Lap 23, Lewis Hamilton puts on a set of fresh Pirellis while Romain Grosjean finds himself in second position, 21 seconds behind Sebastian Vettel. Fernando Alonso now is a sitting duck with DRS by Mr. Webber, who sails right past for eighth place. I'm still, you know, tearing up about Fernando. Lap 26, Paul DeRussa passes Romain Grosjean for second. And this is some good dicing up here between Romain and Paul DeRussa. Cars evenly matched, drivers evenly matched. Great driving and clean driving. I loved it.
Yeah, you know, talking of clean driving, it's very interesting. You know, now thanks, you know, everybody complains about they give a penalty for small things. And, you know, I've also voiced my opinion on these issues. But I think it's the fear of these penalties, which can be very costly in terms of points and finishes. You don't see a lot of, you know, like we used to see in the old days, two guys sliding off on a corner and stuff like that. So it has had some positive influence.
Absolutely, absolutely. Lap 28, Romain Grosjean pits from third and switches to the hard compound. He rejoins in ninth behind Felipe Massa. Lap 29, Lewis Hamilton passes Valtteri Bottas, your Finnish dude, to climb into the points in 10th, which is a bummer. I was hoping, I'd love to see Williams at least get a point. These people are suffering over there. I mean, it's just, I hate to see such a wonderful team go down in flames and fire.
Yeah, and it's one of the most successful teams in terms of wins and championships. So it'll be nice for the sport for them to have some better luck and results.
Okay, lap 32 is when we see some excitement between Jenson Button and Sergio Perez. And Jenson Button, you know, deep down in the gut, everybody wants to be number one. Jenson Button is the leader of this McLaren team. But Sergio Perez didn't get the memo.
Yes, he did rattle the cage this time around.
That's
for sure.
He certainly did. Jenson Button is shocked that Sergio Perez just drove him off the circuit in defense of fifth place. And they're banging wheels. I mean, for a minute there, I started going Dijon 79.
Exactly. And, you know, before the race, Martin Whitmarsh urged Sergio to use his elbows more in defending his position. And like you said, Sergio did not get the memo, which said, do not use this tactic on your teammate. But this could have been very costly. You know, I was surprised that when he hit Bouton, that there was no major damage.
Very lucky.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, if you take out both cars and you don't finish in the top 10, this is not very good. And the team is going to be a little ticked off. And JB was calling the team to calm his teammate down.
Yeah, Jenson Button gets on the radio and says, come on, guys, get this guy off of me.
But, you know, I have to say, you know, I watched the reviewed it a couple of times. Yeah, Sergio was very aggressive and went off track, this and that. But there were occasions where Jenson gave him no room.
So absolutely, I agree. Like, and I thought it was refreshing and to see some good, clean fighting in this large falafel in the middle where we see so much tire management.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, this reminded me of the halcyon days of another McLaren pairing when team put two tigers in a cage and the rattling was heard from Imola to Suzuka.
Ooh. Yeah, Romain Grosjean has a stab at Sergio afterwards, down in turn one. Perez says, no! But a few corners later, Grosjean did pass the Mexican, I thought, which was great. Lap 35, Kimi Raikkonen pits for the hard tires, and this should be his last stop, which I thought was a little early. But we know Kimi is the dude when it comes to smooth operation on these horrendous, degrading tires. Lewis Hamilton passes Sergio Perez for fifth, giggling a little bit because Sergio is struggling. The Mexican then reports that he's losing power. Wasn't sure he was, but it really, there was no power issue. I think it was just Perez in a little fog. Maybe the fog of the falafel and the garbanzo beans.
Yeah, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I have an idea.
Exactly. Lap 37, Paul DeRusta pits from second and rejoins in eighth while Felipe Massa is forced to pit again after his right rear tire just splits. And I'm telling you, when you see the replay of the tire just separating, to me, looks like a bad situation for Pirelli. Come on, Pirelli, Ferrari, they're both Italian.
Cinturato.
Yes, well, what's up? I mean, Dominic Alli can't be happy. Our friend Montezemolo's not happy. Now, the new Pope is an Italian descent. So come on, I'm thinking all these, this trifecta should get together and get the power going. I don't know, but poor Felipe, poor Ferrari. Exciting stuff later on here. Sergio Perez and Fernando both pit at the same time. The stewards announced that they're investigating our friends Mark Webber and Nico Rosberg for having a little tit-for-tat, but I called it a racing incident. So on lap 40, Vettel leads by 28 seconds over Raikkonen, DeRusta, and Raikkonen now trying a two-stop strategy. Don't forget, he pitted on lap 35, and he's got to do 22 laps on these tires, which he can. Lap 41, Sebastian Vettel is leading by 27.6 seconds. Romain Grosjean is second. And both drivers have to stop again. Kimi Raikkonen is third, 4 seconds further back. Lap 45, Lewis Hamilton is on the charge. He passes his old McLaren teammate, Jenson Button, for sixth. And Sergio Perez is now an easy move on teammate Jenson Button for seventh. Fernando Alonso, without the DRS, takes advantage of the situation and passes Button down the inside at turn four. Button is now going backwards. What do you think was going on there?
No, I think it was very good to see these McLaren boys duke it out. And, you know, some cage rattling is always good. And I just hope that the trend continues. And I was very also happy to see LCH later in the race start driving like LCH. He was determined to go after Webber.
I know. I thought that was great. Lap 47, Fernando Alonso passes Sergio Perez down into turn one. Perez, great fight back with Fernando. Fernando does not have DRS. So even though Fernando is going to pass Sergio, he knows in the straight, there's nothing I can do. Great stuff with Perez fighting tooth and nail with his Spanish-speaking friend. Kimi Raikkonen now on lap 48 is encountering traffic as he tries to hunt down the leader, Sebastian Vettel. Outstanding lap 49, Romain Grosjean has an awesome, awesome pace at this stage of the race, and he's now catching and reeling in Paul DeRusta. I'm afraid, Nasser, listen, I'm a Renault fan, but I really was hoping that DeRusta could hold on to this third podium position.
No, that would have been very good.
Oh, my God. The Darios, the Pauls, it would have been out of control.
Maybe Ashley would have come back.
I don't know about that. I heard she's a troublemaker. Always yelling, nag, nag, nag. Yeah, Dario knows what's going on. Lap 52, Romain Grosjean closing in closer and closer to Paul. Paul seeing his dream, his beautiful accomplishment of a podium fading fast. It's getting blurrier and blurrier, and he keeps seeing that fugly face in his mirrors closer and closer.
But, you know, it's very important for these drivers, especially Nando, trying to salvage some points.
Oh, absolutely.
And also DeResta. No point in, why would you fight when you know you're not going to come out ahead long run?
And they know that, and they get on the radio. This is millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars, and it's very good for you. You got to finish first to get some points and all that. So I think it was a smart driving on part of a lot of drivers.
Absolutely. Lap 53, Mark Webber now steals fifth back from Lewis Hamilton at turn one. And all the action is at turn one. Fernando Alonso is now closing on the two, and he's hoping to do Hamilton as well.
That's always a good fight.
You love LCH and Fernando.
Oh, they have a lot of respect for each other.
Memories, too.
Alonso even said Sebastian Vettel has still ways to go before he's like LCH. What does that tell you?
Well, that tells me that you know, LCH has already had some fantastic teammates like Fernando, and Sebastian hasn't.
Yes, so that might change next year.
That could change next year.
We shall talk more.
Oh, boy. Paul DeRosa now powerless to stop Romain Grosjean on lap 56. It's just impossible. Grosjean is doing an outstanding job for Lotus. Lewis Hamilton slides down the inside of Mark Webber at turn one on lap 57. Absolutely great stuff. And it's good to see the falafel with the exciting racing we're getting on at the end of these Grand Prix, even though it's a little boring in the middle.
Yeah.
It's
the start and the finish where the excitement
absolutely.
Is.
Sebastian Vettel, of course, wins the Grand Prix. Kimi Raikkonen, consistency. Another second position, hauling in the points. Definitely a contender in this championship.
He could have been a contender if he was at Red Bull.
Yeah, that's true. But we never know. Lotus is still powerful. He's using the Kiwanda exhaust. They've got another couple of secret items here that nobody's... I'm not talking expanding tires, but still.
And he's not going to tell anyone what those secrets are.
Exactly. And Grosjean rounding off the podium, which is the identical podium we had last year at Bahrain. What do you think it all means in the grand scheme of things?
This is fantastic. You know, I think the Sebastian Vettel 4-4 train is now is moving like TGV in Francia and the bullet train in Japan. Very exciting. This victory was win number 28, making him a wee bit better than the wee Scott himself for Jackie Stewart. Stewart had 27 wins, and at that time, many thought, myself included, nobody will ever pass that. And Stewart's last win came at the 1973 German Grand Prix at the 14.2-mile Nürburgring. But this victory for Vettel was very, very good, coming so soon after his sort of a debacle in Malaysia. I mean, this really proves, you know, this guy is tremendous talent. Not that nobody knew, but this was very forceful driving, fantastic fight at the start. And, of course, you know, there he is in points, and look where his teammate is. So it's game on.
Yes, and we've seen this all before. I'm really impressed with these fights at the start because all these drivers are keen, and they're doing an outstanding job of not crashing into each other, but still keeping the level very, very high. So outstanding.
Yeah, and as far as the Lotus lads are concerned, of course, same podium as we had last year. Keep calm and carry on is the Kimi mantra. It will be hard to match the resources of Red Bull plus the genius of Adrian Newey. Lotus will need some serious infusion of speed in the car or a run of bad luck for Bastian, like Nando last year, for Kimi to have a chance of winning the championship. And I hope, just a personal hope, that the rumor mill has it right that Kimi will be at Red Bull next season. They sponsored him in his World Rally Championship foray. And that will, if that happens, that will be true litmus test of how good Sebastian Vettel really is. And as long as Kimi is at Lotus, Romain Grosjean will remain not bad for a number two. He was given a new chassis for this race, and he put on a good show to claim a podium finish. Grosjean, Sutil, Di Resta, and Hülkenberg, I sure would like to see them get their first win this year. It will be very good for the sport.
Actually, yes, and I'm glad you mentioned Hülkenberg. He had a pretty good race, but what happened to Esteban?
Well, I was going to say that under the heading of the Song of Sauber, the Swiss cuckoo is not singing a happy tune for rookie Esteban Gutierrez, one of our original friends from the day we started podcasting. Once again, he was involved in fender bender in the opening laps and finished a lap down in 18th. I'm hoping, you know, I'm a big fan of his career. He's done very well over the years. His performance will improve on European tracks, where he has quite a bit of experience from his HP2, HP3, and F3 days. But he will really have to get going. You know, like Sergio Perez came on fire this race, sooner or later. But I think the smart thing for him would be not to go and try to beat Hülkenberg, just stay out of trouble. You know, this was like in the first 10 laps, he tried to go inside one of the two Caterhams, and then his wing was clipped. And he needs to avoid those things.
Paul DeResta, good to race? Is he going places?
Paul DeResta has done very well after so many years in DTM, where he was very good. And he's a good talent, there's no question about it. What else you want to talk about? Senor.
Oh, the Perez and Button situation. Do you think they're going to get a good talking to?
I think so, because they came very close to screwing up the whole thing. And when you have a car that's not really in the top three on a regular basis, you those fourth, fifth point place points are very, very important. Shall we give a little rundown on the championship standings?
You know, that's a good idea. And I have a funny feeling
that Sebastian Vettel is leading.
Yeah.
You know what is impressive is he has two wins, 77 points on top of the heap, as we like to say here. Second is Raikkonen, only 10 points behind. And with 25 at stake, he is there. Okay, Hamilton 50, your man Alonso 47, and fifth is Mark Webber 32. So Sebastian already has more than twice the point of his teammate, and that's not a good sign for Mark Webber right
now.
Well,
look at what happened in Massa last year compared to his teammate.
That was
beyond
sad.
Acceptable.
That was very sad. In the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull 109, Lotus 93, Ferrari 77, fourth is Mercedes 74, and fifth is Force India with 26 points. Shall we do a moment with Massa now, talking about Massa?
We should talk about Massa, but quickly, this is a pretty dismal start to a season for McLaren.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think they made a comment about Sergio Perez that he has had the worst start of any McLaren driver after joining the team.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the way it goes. Well, a moment with Massa. Felipe, since joining Ferrari, has been teammate to Schumacher, Raikkonen, and Alonso. That is like being on the same team as Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and LeBron James. And your coach is asking, what are you doing? You know, I mean, that's a tough order for this kid. So here's a question from the Bahrain press conference put to Felipe Massa.
Dan Knutson, Auto Action and National Speed Sport News. A question for Felipe. By now, you're very used to having a world champion as a teammate. Describe to us the challenges, the pressures, and the satisfaction of working with and competing against a guy who is the champion and therefore one of the best in the world.
Yeah, I think for sure I had most of my career a strong teammate, you know. I think many people say, it's not good to have, but I think it's positive. I mean, I think you always need to do the best you can. But if you don't do the perfect job, you know you're going to be behind, you know. So, and I think in terms of experience, you learn a lot, you know, by working with a good teammate, you know, strong driver. To be honest, he's from maybe most of you guys or many people around the world, is maybe everybody's talking about him as the best driver, you know. So, you know, you have a lot to do. You have a very important job, you know, and I think that's good. I mean, it's always you're always on the pressure, you know, because you need to do you need to be perfect every day, you know. And but I think I think it's nice. I think it's important, and we always need to grow. You know, we always need to get better and better, and that's what I'm trying to do all the time.
And now, how about some history about this Bahrain thing?
Bahrain Grand Prix. The first F1 race in the Arab world since the 1958 Moroccan Grand Prix. A Tilke masterpiece, the track is known as BIC, Flick Up BIC, Bahrain International Circuit, not too far from the capital of kingdom, as they call it, Manama. The inaugural event in 2004 saw a Ferrari front row and top two steps of the podium. Rubinho was second to the Red Baron, Herr Schumacher. Sato San was fifth in this race, and Monty was 13th in a Williams. How sands of time have shifted. You know what I'm saying?
They do shift.
Yes. In 2005, Nando won from pole in his Renault. Ralf Schumacher was fourth for Toyota, while his teammate truly came in second. The following year, Bahrain was the season opener, and Nando won again, this time after starting fourth. Poleman Schumacher was second, and Raikkonen was third after starting 22nd. This was the season when McLaren was having one day the right rear view mirror will fall off, then the next and the next day. There was a lot of problems in those days. In 2007, the top three qualifiers, sounds familiar, also finished in that order. Massa winning over Hamilton and Raikkonen, 2008 saw two in a row for Massa. In 2009, it was Button and a Brown in Bahrain. You know, what I remember most from the Bahrain Grand Prix is when your man Nando was leading. I don't know if he was leading, but I think he was. And they're coming to the first corner, and here comes Massa in his Ferrari sliding right across his car, in front of his car. Do you remember that race?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. Close call. In 2010, Bahrain was again the season opener. Nando wins first time out with Ferrari. Massa was second. Need I say more? With Antonio Liuzzi was ninth for Force India. The race has seen some interesting pole positions over the years. In 2008, Robert Kubica started first for BMW Sauber and came in third behind Massa and Raikkonen. The following year, it was the Trulli train that left the platform on time from pole position and also finished third. The race was not held in 2011 due to some natives getting restless. And last year, the podium saw same faces and same places as the Grand Prix last Sunday. And there you have it, the historia of Bahrain.
Well, thanks, Nas. Keep up the good work for that info. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I am Takuma Sato. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charon region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charon. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinode is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinode.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards. Headlines from the weekend. Mexican uprising in Manama. Sato San slays them all in Southland. And coming soon, very important, Clark, world premiere of Ballad of 07. And we shall explain gladly. We shall start with our favorite, Hapidos. Feature race winner Fabio Laimer, second win in three races for the Swiss driver. Stefano Coletti of Monaco, second, and Alexander Rossi from Northern Cali came in third in his first race of the season. He has done some GP2 races before in the GP2 Asia series, but this was a very impressive performance because he did not take part in the first race. Felipe Nasr was fourth. In the sprint race, Felipe came extremely close to winning his first GP2 race, but after a great battle, it was Sam Byrne who landed on the top step of the podium. Coletti was third, and he has now finished on the podium in all four races of the season so far. Very impressive. Not surprisingly, Coletti leads the championship with 64 points, 10 ahead of second place Laimer. Cousin Felipe is third with 48. Indy cars. Dario Franchitti started from pole with Ryan Hunter-Reay sharing the front row with him, and this was, of course, in the LBGP, Long Beach Grand Prix, Southern California. When the street fight was over, it was Sato San scoring his first win on this side of the pond. First Japanese driver to win in Indy cars and first win for AJ Foyt Racing since Kansas 2002, when the winning driver was Ayrton Dare. Victory was very impressive for Sato and not a hand-me-down. His previous best finish was second at Edmonton last year, and he came very close to winning the Indy 500. As a driver, Bobby Rahal finished second at Long Beach four times. His son Graham continued the family tradition on Sunday. Justin Wilson was third for Dale Coyne Racing, the Minardi of IndyCar Racing. Pole sitter Franchitti led 27 laps and finished fourth in the championship for the Tony George Trophy. Now that's, I just made that up. Elio Castroneves leads with 99 points, 6 points behind in second is Sato San. Scott Dixon completes the top three on 89 points. Round four is on April 29th in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
You think Rubinho is going to be there?
I think they might have a support race for Brazilian stock car racing. He might be there.
That'd be fun.
He lives just down the road.
I miss Rubinho. And I miss the other Rubinho. The four-legged Rubinho.
Yeah, exactly.
Haven't had no news. I guess he's out to pasture.
Yeah.
Or he could be like cat food by now.
Or as David Letterman might say, you know, he might be on a bun in New York City.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so sad. Well, Indy Lights, pole man was Carlos Munoz, and we had a percolated Colombian podium with Munoz winning after leading from start to finish. Second was compadre Gabi Chavez, who's a pretty decent young driver. Second successive win for Munoz. First lap accident took out championship leader Jack Hawksworth. Apparently his mistake, and he was not too thrilled.
And that was a great race to watch.
Did you watch this?
Oh, I watched everything. We had a lot of racing this weekend. Happy Dos, which has full coverage now on television. We watched Indy Lights. The Indy Long Beach Grand Prix was exciting. Boy, I'm telling you.
Yeah. And you know what I like about GP2? They're now GP2 races they used to show on Sunday, you know, and then a little bit of sprint race. But now they are, noticed they showed the GP2 race on Saturday, so which was good. Okay, also in Long Beach, American Le Mans Series, three in a row for Klaus Graf and Lucas Lohr. Second was Nick Heidfeld and Neil Yani.
Who?
Nick Heidfeld? Yeah.
I remember him.
Yeah. Huh. He was going to drive.
You still have that Bobby Sherman haircut?
Yeah, he was on his way to driving for Ron Dennis, and then Peter Sauber made the mistake of hiring a guy with 23 car races, and he wouldn't talk to anybody, not even to his teammate. And that was the end of Nick Heidfeld coming to McLaren. All these things happen. And his teammate was Neil Yani, or Johnny, who started from pole. Victory was 42nd in the series for Lucas Lohr, equaling the record of Olivier Barreta. The GT category was won by Bobby Rahal's team in a BMW Z4, if you're in England, and Australia, driven by Bill Oberlin and Maxime Martin. And if I'm screwing up any of these names, lay apologies. Okay, now we go to the other side. This is a fantastic track, Road Atlanta, Grand Am Series. Scott Pruitt and Memo Rojas won the race in their Ganassi Racing BMW-powered Riley. The CalMax duo now leads the championship over second place Alex Gurney and John Fogarty. MotoGP, this was, I did not watch this race, but a fantastic result here. First pole in, did you watch this?
No, I did not watch this.
Since you were watching everything.
I have, you know.
You have limits.
I have limits. I have, you know, gardening to do.
Familia.
Watching, la familia, the children. It's hecticness.
Okay, cool. First pole in the top league for Spaniard Marc Marquez. Honda teammate and compadre Danny Pedrosa was second, and third Espanol Jorge Lorenzo, or as Rossi would say, Jorge Lorenzo, completed the front row. You know, they have three riders on the front row.
Correct.
Each row. Okay, the order was the same at the end of the race, with Marquez winning in only his second MotoGP start, and in process becoming the youngest winner in the series, which is very, very impressive. Previous youngest winner was Freddie Spencer after winning the 1982 Belgian Grand Prix. Valentino Rossi was sixth on a Yamaha, and Nicky Hayden on a Ducati was the top American in ninth. This time I didn't say Amerikanski.
That's good.
Because they were racing in Texas, they don't like Amerikanski there.
We heard about that, and they don't like Americanakonski or whatever.
Yeah, so we're trying to be politically correct.
We do try, but we don't try too hard.
No, not too hard. That's not our style. Okay, and what this is beautiful. And what Texas event can be complete without some Texas justice? Former world champion Kevin Schwantz and his company served legal papers to president of Dorna, Carmelo Espleta, over what Schwantz said was some delicious breakfast at Four Seasons, though they served him at Four Seasons when he was having breakfast. As always, money is the issue over promotional rights to MotoGP in Austin. Marquez and Lorenzo now share the championship lead with 41 points each. Round three is at Jerez in Spania on May 5. Cinco de Mayo. You think Sergio Perez should go and race in this race?
I don't like Cinco de Mayo.
Why?
The French lost.
Oh, I'm
very sensitive, Nasser.
You are?
But I did like the podium at the Bahrain Grand Prix, where Sebastian Vettel thanked
Renault and talked about Willy Chatillon.
Exactly, and they say merci beaucoup pour le...
Yeah.
Well, we'll see if that alternator shows up again.
Then yeah, but you know, a German guy, you know,
thanking the French,
speaking highly of the French, you know.
God, I'll
be careful.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have that small mustache after all.
No, I don't think so. I think he's just going to keep his full beard and keep on rolling. This kid is going to win a lot of races this year. You know, the only person who's going to come in his way, I think, right now is Nando.
It's possible. Yeah. Or Kimi. Kimi's very consistent, Nass.
Yeah, but I think it's he doesn't have the package.
But it's a close package.
Yeah, it is close. That is for sure. Okay, Jamie is a jailbird. Former racer in American Le Mans Series, Jamie Melo has been arrested in Brazil, where he comes from, after crashing a car into a house, then resisting military arrest. Very interesting. He used to race a Ferrari for Risi Competizione in American Le Mans Series and was a GT2 class champion in 2007. Storm in a Cup. Claims by this is very interesting. Claims by LCH that he was thrown out of McLaren garage by Sam Michael at a preseason test at Jerez are exaggerated, as per Matt Bishop, ex-editor of F1 magazine and now head of communications at McLaren. Martin Whitmarsh calls it Storm in a Teacup, adding Lewis is welcome in the team's hospitality area to enjoy spaghetti and fish and chips culture. Apparently Sam Michaels asked him, hey, let me just show you how you walk out of this room. So,
Maybe he thought, you know, that he was going to take pictures with his spy camera that was hidden in the hat.
No, I think Sam was upset that he didn't bring Nicole with him.
Oh,
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, he's very sensitive.
Who would throw out Lewis from any room if he's there with Nicole?
Nobody. And she'd be wearing the camera in the hat.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, moving on to your favorite series.
Lunesca.
Kansas. Victory from pole for Matt Kenseth in a Toyota after leading 163 laps. Chevy drivers Casey Kane, no relation to Casey Kasem, and Jimmy Johnson were second and third, respectively. David Gillen, and this was interesting, David Gillen is also one of the drivers, and after the race, he has four words for Danica Patrick: shut up and race. This was his statement released through his PR person after Danica accused him for trying to take her out every time. She called out during the race to her pits, you know, that if he does that one more time, to me, I'll, you know, take him out. In fact, I just might do it right now. I mean, that's not very smart, you know. But, you know, heat of the moment, these things happen. Okay, sir. Are you ready for the Ballad of 07 coming soon for a world debut on F1 Weekly?
You betcha.
Okay. F1 Weekly is pleased to have listeners who are not only passionate about motor racing, but also passionate about music and other things too, like bird watching. Mr. Rogers himself used to be in a rock and roll band before crossing over to podcasting. Correct me if I'm wrong, sir.
Totally correct.
One of our original band members is from Spain, who now resides in Holland, Señor Javier. You know who he is. Vicente Garcia. He has played music all over the world, including many cities in India. So I told him, you know, next time you're in India on an extended tour, Karachi is just in an hour flight from Bombay. I would like to invite him there and have some authentic curry and nihari and naan. Yummy. And he likes all that kind of stuff. And we have enjoyed with Javier, we have enjoyed motorsport discussion over the years. We don't always agree on everything, but we both agree Nando is machismo. And recently it was good to hear from him after his compadre's yet another fantastic win in China. Nando was an important player, as you recall, in the 2007 season, when the silver lining was accompanied by dark clouds and shadows. And we all enjoyed in various ways how the season unfolded. Javier and I had discussed about doing a musical tribute to that very exciting and intriguing season. Well, Moi is trying to be Mercer, Johnny Mercer of motorsports, and I've put together some lyrics, which he appreciated, and Javier is now composing some music, and we shall do a worldwide premiere on this podcast of this tune, The Ballad of 07, very soon.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, and we will share the royalties 50-50 if it makes it to the, you know, cage rattling billboard number one, whatever. Are you ready for some moment in motorsports history?
Yes.
A race I watched in front of a TV, maybe like 6 inches away early morning, and just could not believe what was happening, even halfway through the race. April 21, 1985. One of the greatest maiden wins was scored on this day when Ayrton Senna took victory in heavy rain to win the Portuguese Grand Prix. Driving a Lotus Renault, he lapped the entire field except second place Ferrari of Michele Alboreto. That was a fantastic way to win your first race. Do you remember? You have to remember it was Renault Power.
I know. Lotus F1. Renault.
Yes, sir. So, what are we going to do now? Tech Talk by Tim or the interview? Choice is yours.
I think we should go ahead and do the interview and save the goodies after the interview. And, of course, we'll have 50 words from the forum.
Okay, so we're doing the interview now?
Yeah.
Okay, this interview is with a gentleman from England, Mr. Derek Walters. And he has worked in the United States before, has been involved in motor racing for almost all his professional life, and it was very good to chat with him. He is basically in charge of this program, which I think is a very good program. I wish, you know, we had this similar thing in the U.S., a program called Racing Steps Foundation. It's, you know, British racing enthusiasts, you know, who have money to spend, and they are spending it very wisely on very talented British young drivers. Jack Harvey is one of them, a karting kid, Bernie Code. Is there Collado, James Collado, who is in GP2. He's being supported by them. And, you know, we talk about his experience and the program and how things happen there. So I want to thank him for his time. And hopefully listeners will get a little behind-the-scene look at one of the important racing programs in motor racing right now called Racing Steps Foundation. And I would like to thank him for his time.
Okay, I'm here in Sepang with Mr. Derek Walters, Chief Executive of World Sport Management. Derek, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today, sir?
Well, we're good until the start of the GP2 race, and our driver, James Collado, had an excited moment and unfortunately had a coming together with another car, and so put him out on the first lap, which is not the result we were looking for.
Now, weather here in Kuala Lumpur is very different than in Kent countryside. How did you adjust to the warm weather here?
Well, we had the first day of spring last week, and I think ever since then the weather has deteriorated in the UK. I think they're covered in the white stuff at the moment and nigh on 0 degree temperatures. And of course, we come out here with ambient temperatures of 30 degrees plus and track temperatures in the 40s. And the other thing, which is a killer here, of course, is the high humidity. So as part of James's preparation, we use the Porsche Performance Center at Silverstone, and there they have heat chambers, so James would do an hour cycling in the heat chamber with ambient temperatures in the area of 40 degrees and also with the humidity, and he will be closely monitored during that hour, heart rate, temperature, body temperatures, etc. And we've noticed the five sessions he had towards the end, his heart rate came down substantially and his body internal temperature didn't go as high. So from one extreme to the other, but I think the preparation certainly worked.
Now, we all know jolly old England is the center of motor racing, and you're affiliated with Racing Step Foundation. But before we talk about this foundation, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been involved in motorsports?
Oh, probably more years I care to remember, really. I was with Pirelli for a number of years, and I was moved to Milan in the 80s, and it's probably the last guy to sign a contract with Colin Chapman before that was in the October, and unfortunately Colin passed away in the December. After Milan, I served time in America with Pirelli and lived in California up in the offices in San Jose, and I ran Pirelli in North America for a time. So we had a brilliant press conference, I remember, at Great Universal City in Hollywood. And I have very fond memories of America and the American people, and the terrific opportunity you have there if you get your act together to actually do good business. And it was a very responsive environment in which to work.
Now, Pirelli office used to be very close to the San Jose airport, and a friend of mine used to work there.
Yeah, that's where I was. I used to be watching the planes taking off and landing, in between working, of course, but it was a good place to be because we could fly straight down to John Wayne Airport, where we had the advertising and PR agencies, and it was a great place to live because we were going up over the Golden Gate Bridge up into Napa Valley, and I certainly enjoyed my glass of wine, and that was a good experience.
That's good. Did you enjoy hot dogs and cheeseburgers also?
Well, occasionally, but I have a habit of putting on weight these days, so something has to be watched with care, I think. But,
okay, now, how long have you been with Racing Steps Foundation?
Well, I was approached by a gentleman by the name of Graham Sharp, who'd been in the commodities industry, one of the founders of the Trafigura Group. Graham is a real motorsport hothead and petrol head, and likes to do quite a bit to help young people who are perhaps disadvantaged and haven't got the means to follow their career path. He's doing quite a lot at Oxford University and helping state school children without the means but with the ability to get into the university. And then we met, and he said, I'd like to help some young guys in the UK that have got talent but no money. And that was in the spring of 2007, and we had our first active year of the foundation in 2008. James we picked for, he hadn't driven a single-seater car at that time, and we picked him to enter the 2-litre championship Renault in the UK, and he did particularly well in that 2 years. Went on to Formula 3, then we joined ART in France for GP3, and he and Bottas vied for the championship that year, and then James was in GP2 last year, and he's got a second year in GP2 this year.
Now, when he was picked up, was he picked up because of his karting achievements?
Yeah, he'd been a very keen karter, and I don't know if you guys know a chap named Martin Hines, who unfortunately Martin passed away 2 years ago, I guess this August. And, but Martin had a wonderful eye for talent. Lewis Hamilton had been through him on the karting side, David Coulthard, and so on and so forth. And when we founded the foundation, then we were looking for people to have an input in terms of the talent out there. And he said, you should have a look at James Gallardo. He's something very different and very special. And so we did exactly that. And following on for that, we've had Jack Harvey, who was also under Martin's wing, and Jay Dennis, who we won the World Under 18 Karting Championship, etc. So Martin seems to have been part and parcel of our lives since the foundation was started in 2007.
Okay. Now, do you pick up drivers before they get into single-seaters, or is there a criteria that if you are this age, we won't look at you, or what are the criteria?
Well, I think we certainly pay attention to the age they are and where they are in various championships. As you can see with Vettel, they get younger and younger, and they're making the top spots. So I think one has to pay attention to that. I got 3 young guys in karting this year in the UK with Zipkart, Martin's old company, and I've got somebody in the name of Ben Barnicote, who's racing with ART in karting in Europe, a highly talented young man. He's 16. Then we've got Oliver Rowland, Jake Dennis. They're in 2-litre Eurocup this year, and then Jack Harvey, as I said earlier, GP3, and James in GP2. And then on top of that, we've got 3 guys in motorcycling. One's just moved up, John McPhee, who's in the middle of Scotland, and he'll be joining the Moto3 World Championship this year.
Now, Lewis Williamson is also a young talented Scottish driver. Have you looked at him, or has he been through your program?
He hasn't been through our program. He won the Autosport Award and went in the direction, I think, of Red Bull for a time, and so he never really came on our agenda. I'm not too certain whether he'd have met the criteria in terms of his parents' financial situation or not. You know, most of our parents are certainly pretty poor, and we try to get them on board before they mortgage their house in order to keep their kids running in motorsport, which I think is a principle we disagree with.
Now, talking of Red Bull, sounds like your program, and I say this because I don't hear that a guy has been dropped by Racing Steps Foundation middle of the season. I'm hoping that your program is a lot more kinder and gentler than Red Bull, Marco's machete, all the time.
Yeah, I haven't been on a Dr. Marco course, that's for sure. I think for us, it's been quite important to be very careful about the selection. If the selection's been quite right, then I try to nurture them in 2 directions. One is their racing career and what happens in the car and what's necessary for them to learn to drive quickly and well and competitively. On the other side is the development of the individual, and if you ignore that, I think you ignore quite an important part of the total package. And we're very keen on education. We won't support these guys if they're not paying due attention to their scholarly responsibilities.
What will you do if a young talented driver says to you or your program, "Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing"?
Well, if they do, and they are getting the results, then maybe I might take a deep breath and listen. But these guys have always got something to learn, and I think they're pretty respectful of the environment in which they're in. You know, we're fairly clear on our expectations. They're on an annual contract, and they need to achieve. And if they don't achieve, then you know it's subject to a discussion and maybe the end of the relationship. But generally speaking, we've been very fortunate, and the boys have made good, steady progress through the structure, and I hope they continue to do that. I think that's important. And you know, James, this is his sixth year with the foundation, and he'll be moving on, you know, hopefully to a professional drive somewhere in Formula One or DTM or whatever.
In terms of expectation, obviously this is a performance-based program, as it should be. Is it, when the season starts, is it the same for all drivers that, hey, you got to be in the top three, or you have a different criteria for different series, different drivers?
I don't think I've got anything written in tablets of stone. I think that's probably wrong. I mean, if you look at Calado last year, he could have been in contention with the championship, you know, but we changed four tyres in Barcelona rather than two. That cost us a win in the feature race. In Valencia, we had a 17-second lead. We were the only guys not to have pitted when the not only one safety car, but two other safety cars came out, and that destroyed the strategy completely. He didn't have a very good car in Bahrain and in Monza, so that was pretty well out of his remit. And Silverstone, he was on to win the feature race, and we had a sensor and a gearbox issue. So that's the type of thing, basically, where the driver has no control. But on the other hand, you saw James being very competitive, driving well, impressing a lot of people, also in the pit lane in Formula One, and therefore you take a much more subjective, all-rounded view on that.
Now, taking James Calado just as an example, because he's been with the program for 6 years, safe to assume you folks have invested over maybe $3 to $5 million. How does the repayment of this money, is there a contract like with management team, you know, you're booked for 10 years, how does it work?
Well, we just book them on an annual basis, but we do give them a statement of the amount of money we've invested in them in any 1 year, and that's accumulated over the period there with the foundation. And just as a principle, should they start to earn more than 100,000 sterling a year, then they would start to pay back the foundation of 8% to 10%. I mean, the ideal thing is that somebody like Calado would reach the top, earn a few millions, realise basically he's only there because of the foundation, and would be fairly sympathetic then to supporting the programme and other young people coming into it in future years.
Now, in terms of funding, is this privately funded, or is there support from BP and other British companies?
No, it's totally privately funded by Graham Sharp, and so he's wanted to put something back, and he was on the phone last night talking to James and I, and I'll see him in London on Tuesday before I think he's flying off to China on business on Wednesday. So he's a pretty busy guy, and we don't have any politics in the foundation. There's no particular kind of structure, and so there's an element of freedom in which to work. He's a very quick decision maker. We have a discussion, give him my opinion, and he has his, and it's a yay or nay pretty quickly. So we haven't got to go to committees or anything, and I think that's part of the strength of what we are and what we can do and what we can achieve. And I think we've had nearly 390 single-seater starts since the foundation inauguration, and I think we've nearly had 48% of those on the podium. So it's been a pretty awesome record.
Right. Now, going back to your days with Pirelli and we're signing a contract with Colin Chapman, did he ever tell you how to make tires lighter?
Well, I think we probably did make tyres lighter then. I mean, we were using, because that's the years of the tyre wars, and there were some pretty sophisticated specifications, you know, multi-compound tyres, varying kind of structures, including Kevlar and steel and nylon and so on and so forth. So there's a much higher element of experimentation then, because, you know, you had to turn things around within a week, within a fortnight, and come to the circuit with something new. And of course, it was the days, I guess, of turbocharging, 1.4, 1.5 litres. I tend to remember the BMW engine in the Brabham was producing something like 1,200 brake horsepower in qualifying, and we had tyres which lasted a lap to absorb the energy and put some rubber on the road. And then we scrapped the tyres, they scrapped the engines. But the sport has grown up a lot since then, and those days have now are over, I guess, in that sense. But there was something very beneficial about being in a competitive environment, because that's when you really push the technology on very quickly and smoothly. We're in a slightly different game now with one tyre in the championship. You can set the specifications, you haven't got to change it, you're only racing against yourself, and that's brought some peculiar arguments and debates about the whole element now of racing. And I was talking to somebody in Mercedes recently, and they said, well, last year we had one guy looking after tyre technology, now we've got six. And so the teams are having to spend money to understand how the tyres are working. And it's not so different here in GP2. I mean, it's quite an issue. And quite restrictive on the freedom to just go out and race, I think.
Now, were you with Pirelli and at Paul Ricard when Piquet won in the Brabham?
That was the last time we did win. There was a fairly significant political moment as well, and I think we were on the verge of packing up then, and then Piquet won and all was forgiven, and we had a party back at the factory. So it was an interesting time. Yeah.
In all the years you followed motor racing, tell me the top two or three motor races or motor racing events that you remember or that come to mind, and who would you rate as... let's put it this way. If you had a Formula One team and all the time you have been following motor racing, who would you pick as two drivers from all time?
Well, that's a big question. There's been so many talented individuals over the years. And I guess for a lot of the years I was with Pirelli, I was much more involved on the rally side, which and they're the heady days of the Group B cars, and when rallying was a really significant world championship. And those boys are very different. And I was working with the Vatanens and the Mikulas and Kankanens of this world, and that was really exciting. On the single-seater side, I remember we had a contract with Tolman, and that really kind of pulled us into F1 from the Formula 2 Tolman days. And I remember being at Silverstone when Senna had his first Formula 1 drive in a Tolman car, which is and that was significant. And you just saw the elements of that young man and his sensitivity as to what was going on in the car, even though he'd never driven it before. And he'd bring it in after a few laps and said, there's something changed here. It's not tyres, it's not this. Is very analytical. Maybe it's a downforce on the rear axle, and we checked the rear wing and it had moved a couple of centimetres or something, and he picked it up. I mean, just an extraordinary individual, and I think to see him race was sheer poetry. And on the other hand, I mean, Nigel Mansell we had at Lotus, but obviously had his heady days at Williams, and Nigel was just a really strong physically and mentally individual and driver, and he put his heart on his sleeve, I think, and went for it. And Nigel was, again, very exciting, very dynamic at that time, as Lewis is today. I think some of these drivers, when they go on track, you get a sense of expectation that they're going to make something happen, and they have the ability to do that. Yeah.
In your association with Mansell at Lotus, did you ever see him and Peter Warr smiling together?
No, in fact, that became quite interesting, because I had in the contract that we had a say on the drivers, and Nigel used to be ringing me quite often in Milan saying if he made any decision about drivers, because he knew probably his life was on the line with Peter Ward. But Nigel survived, whether it was through our influence or not, I don't know, and went on to achieve great things, both in America, of course, and on the Formula One stage. And I see him occasionally now, and he's a good man. And even when he's a steward here at the F1 meetings, he's a very sound counsel for that. And he has a good eye for what's right and good, I think, in terms of racing.
I really appreciate your time. Finally, we have listeners all over the world, quite a few in UK. How about a message to our listeners?
Well, we hope obviously all the foundation boys actually make it to the top. It's been an awesome program. There's been nothing like it, as far as I know, that's been established. It's been an incredible journey for us. You know, we've got 10 boys now, and they're all doing well. They've all got set objectives, and for me, it's a pleasure just to see them taking advantage of that and getting the results, and hopefully they'll turn that into a stable and fruitful career going forward. And that's what life is all about at the end of the day, isn't it? If you've got the focus and the determination, it's amazing what you can achieve.
Thank you very much, sir.
Pleasure.
Derek, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, now we have our favorite episode of
Tech Talk by Tim.
And this is good stuff. Kwanda exhaust, Nas.
Yes, sir. This is good stuff, as is anything else from him when he's contributing to this wonderful podcast, and we certainly appreciate that. And Tim, as we have mentioned, is a student at Stanford, and who knows, pretty soon he might be at JPL or Boeing or Airbus, I don't know. But we hope that he will continue to make this fine contribution wherever he is. And we might see him at Spa-Francorchamps during a Formula One race this year.
That's fantastic, Nas.
So please enjoy this Tech Talk by Tim, and we thank you for your cooperation.
Hello, F1 Weekly. This is Tim. I have a really quick, fun, and yes, safe experiment for you. Okay, take a tiny little piece of paper and roll it into a small ball about the size of a pea. Put this piece of paper on a table at about half an arm's length away. Now blow on the piece of paper and see what happens. Not surprisingly, it moves directly away from you. Okay, now set it up again, and this time place a glass on the table between you and the paper. A clear glass works best so you can see what's happening. Now again, blow towards the paper, and amazingly, the paper still moves directly away from you, even though it's hiding behind the glass. Clearly, the airflow is bending around the curved glass and reaching the paper on the other side. Okay, let's really test this idea of bending airflow. Place the piece of paper behind the glass one more time, but this time blow along the side of the glass. What happens? If you've lined everything up properly, you should see the paper moves away diagonally, as if the airflow is wrapping around the glass and hitting the paper at an angle. This is actually exactly what's happening. And this is the Kwanda effect. You've probably heard about Kwanda exhaust and how teams have been trying all kinds of tricks to use this effect to benefit their cars. Kwanda exhaust became a big deal once blowing exhaust gases toward the diffuser at the back of the car became outlawed. Technical Regulation 5.8.4, which I highly recommend you all study thoroughly, mandates that there can be no aerodynamic devices in the exhaust flow. But as we have just shown, as we blew on the glass from the side, airflows can attach themselves to a curved surface and follow that curved surface. So the beauty of the Kwanda effect is that you don't need to place any fins or any turning vanes in the exhaust flow to turn it. You can simply place a curved surface next to the flow, and the flow will bend itself around that surface. Brilliant! This allows exhaust gases to be bent around the Coke bottle back of the car, and down between the wheels and the diffuser to enhance downforce. So once again, the teams have shown that they can overcome the FIA's regulations with engineering creativity. The Kwanda effect also helps explain some other interesting sporting phenomena. Take golf, for example. Golf ball dimples are designed to create turbulent, bumpy air around the fast-moving ball in flight. The Kwanda effect actually has an easier time bending this bumpy air around the ball. Smoother air has a harder time bending around the ball, and instead, it gets pushed out of the way, leaving a void behind the ball, which tries to suck the ball backwards and reduces its range. So, there you have it, there you go. Curved surfaces will bend a flow. Kwanda. Cheers.
Thank you, Tim, and keep up an F1 Weekly good work. Okay, let's go ahead and do 50 words from the forum.
Here is Desiree back again with 50 words on the 2013 Bahrain Grand Prix from our forum. First from Frank Douglasson. Rosberg, Vettel, and Alonso offer some fantastic dicing in the first three laps. Then the quality of racing tapers off mysteriously as DRS is enabled, and the Pirelli start degrading. Wheel-to-wheel racing doesn't return in earnest until the engineers take the leash off their drivers in the closing laps. And from Leon Bray. Strange race. Lots of overtaking, but not much excitement. Vettel cruises away at half a second a lap and gets told to slow down so it didn't look so easy. Tires dictated the pace, and DRS made passing super easy, very artificial. The race was over when Fred's DRS malfunctioned. He looks like the only one capable of coming from behind and taking the fight to Fritz. And from R.O. Jackson. Aggressive driving by all. A series of unfortunate events for Ferrari. A race Nico would like to forget. By my observations, attendance at the race looked abysmal. And we have from Chemex with an add-on from Jackson. Mark Marquez continues to amaze in his rookie season with a fantastic display. Oops, wrong race. Added Jackson, albeit a more interesting race. And here are my own words on the Bahrain Grand Prix. The desert is boring. The race seemed faked. My condolences to Nico and Fred. Happy to see the black and gold on the podium.
Thanks, everyone. Nas, another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Outstanding interview. It doesn't get better than this. Nas, I want you to have a pleasant afternoon. Thank you and good night.
Thank you and bye-bye.